I do have a job that I've come to find sounds like something a little kid would make up. Like, when I grow up, I'm going to watch movies all day and someone's going to pay me for it. Yeah, like, sure, buddy, that's going to happen for you. But somehow that's the situation I find myself in as an adult. And I've noticed, you know, at cocktail parties or funerals that when I describe to people what I do and they're not in the arts, it usually takes a little explanation. And specifically what I do, as Jessica said, is I'm the director of programming for New Next Film Festival. And that's just a fancy way of saying curator. So basically, yes, I watch and pick movies. And when I tell people that, sometimes they look at me with the same seriousness you would look at somebody who says they, like, chase Pokemon for a living or along those lines. You know, it's like, doesn't sound like a real thing to some people. But to make them understand what I do, sometimes quantifying it helps. So, for instance, sometimes in a week I'll watch, and maybe you could imagine yourself doing this too, 40 or more hours of movies, but these are not movies you got to pick. These are movies that picked you. They were sent to you out of the void. You have no idea what you're pressing play on, what kind of experience you're going to get. And that's really what a film programmer does. And you kind of start off with your work cut out for yourself. So like this year, last month actually, we opened up our call for entries, which is when filmmakers can start sending you their movies. And the first day we posted on Instagram, hey, you can do it now. And we were sent 50 movies that day. So it's like, you're not going to watch 50 movies in a day, right? You're already in the hole. And by the time all is said and done, I expect I'll have been sent about 1,000 movies in June when I close the call for entries. So, and yes, I do watch every single one of them. I watch them all the way to the end. I take careful notes. You know, it's like, I'm trying to take, you know, it's a fun job, but it's also, I'm a gatekeeper, and I take that seriously. Like, I'm not trying to be nepotistic, and I'm not trying to be lazy about this. I'm trying to take it seriously and realize that these are people's hopes and dreams. But if we go back to when I was a little kid, and this was not a job that I could have dreamed up as a little kid, like actually really impossible for me. I grew up without even a TV in the house. My parents thought it would be good for me for some reason to be reading books or playing outside, things like that. But I quickly found that's not where my interests lie, although I do read a lot. But yeah, I'm not a football guy, for instance. By the time, you know, like, so as a little kid, it didn't matter if it was like Citizen Kane or like Crocodile Dundee 2, you know, it's like equally mesmerizing and transfixing to me. It was all movie magic. And in middle school, when like we're having sleepovers and eating pizza and horror movies, like, this actually contradicts the Jessica story, but, you know, when the other kids are like, oh, maybe we should sneak out and try to talk to girls, I'm like, well, we got a third horror movie here. Like, we should put this in the VCR, you know? So it's always been a lifetime of movies, but I got out of college having seen a lot of movies, but not any clear career plan or certainly financial plan. I had developed maybe a little bit of a knack for writing, and so I thought, oh, maybe I should write the great American novel someday. But there wasn't a clear plan to execute that, and I had to pay the bills somehow. So I was kind of drifting from job to job here in Baltimore in the late 90s, and my hangout during this time was Video American. People remember Video American? Okay, yeah. So, yeah, the biggest applause of the night, and deservedly so. If you don't know Video American, it was a special place. You missed out. You can, however, get a sneak peek at it because there's a juicy scene in John Waters' movie Serial Mom shot in Video American. And it's not like a flash. It's like 10 minutes, so it's worth checking out. I do recommend it. But anyway, this is where I was hanging out every night. Just like picking the brains of the clerks there, soaking up the history, the film ambiance, and, you know, for a $3 rental, just making sure I spent those $3 wisely and took home the best movie, like reading all the VCR, VHS covers. And eventually I was there so much, they just figured they better give me a job. So they broke down and hired me. And that's when something really incredible happened. Like, movies took over my life during that period. I was, you know, they were free rentals as an employee, so I was watching 3 or 4 movies a night, no exaggeration. And not a lot of time left for that great American novel. And the owners of Video American announced one day, like, hey, we're going to send you and a coworker to Toronto Film Festival as a bonus. Which, this was like a new concept to me, like film festival. I knew I loved movies, but I'd never been to a major international festival. So, but we're going to be there just for 48 hours. So, you know, it was a meager video store budget. So my coworker and I really looked at the schedule and planned out, like, you know, how are we going to make this work for 48 hours? And what we found was the most movies you could watch in a day was 6. And this is if you started at 9 a.m. and watched continuously through the midnight movie. Maybe you could catch a, you know, dollar slice of pizza in a line somewhere or something. But this was our plan, and we executed the plan. We got out of day one. We got out of our movie around 2 o'clock in the morning and had seen 6. And walking back to our somewhat seedy hotel, we decided, let's just keep walking and talk about the movies a little bit because we're really abuzz with what we'd seen. And before too long, the sun came out. We'd been walking and talking all night, no sleep, and it was time to line up and watch 6 more. So that was my first film festival experience, 12 movies in 48 hours, a lot of delirium. And I came back to Baltimore kind of a changed person, but there are 2 things about that trip to Toronto other than the 48-hour spree that really stick in my mind and have informed my work. One was how awesome it was having the filmmakers there presenting their films. It didn't matter if it was, you know, an unknown or if it was an icon like Werner Herzog. The value and experience it added to have them there sharing their experience making the film was something I never knew that I wanted, but it really just changed my life. And the other thing, and this has really changed about Toronto Film Festival, but at the time, it was a very accessible film festival. The movies weren't quite selling out. Now it's a very red carpety, celebrity-driven thing. But back then, tickets were like $10 Canadian, which this was pre-9/11, so that's like 75 cents or something, like not a lot of money, you know? So it's really easy to get into these movies, and that stuck with me too, that like there shouldn't be a big barrier for entry to get into these movies. So when I got back to Baltimore, instantly started doing some film festival and film-related stuff. There was an underground festival here called Micro Cinefest. Skiz Cizik, who's an absolute legend, ran that, and I volunteered for him there. I started a 16mm film series, underground stuff, at the Red Room at Normal Books and Records. And I had already been writing music reviews, but I switched over and went really hard on writing movie reviews, interviews with directors, and that sort of stuff for City Paper. So a couple years of doing that for City Paper and, you know, maybe overconfidently walked into the BMA and convinced a curator there to let me fire up the 35mm projectors that had been, you know, asleep for a long time and do a free-to-the-public foreign film series at the BMA. So, you know, this is maybe around 2005, 2006. There was no plan, but there was passion, and I was just doing things that interested me. And yet, in 2007, when a job opened up at the Maryland Film Festival programming team, to my surprise, and to no one's surprise more than mine, I was qualified, and I got the job. So I was a film programmer, and I had to learn, you know, what that meant as a living. And this is 2007. I ended up staying there for a little while, 11 years. And those 11 years, without implying causation, were really transformative years for film culture. There were a lot of young names who were coming up, and I was there supporting the early work by people like Greta Gerwig and Barry Jenkins and the Safdie brothers, who are now making, you know, really big movies and a big part of the industry. But 11 years is 11 years, and I really burned out on the gig at Maryland Film Festival, left that in 2018. And I didn't leave the film festival world, however. I started a consulting business where I was helping young filmmakers navigate the labyrinth that is festival applications, best practices for sending your film places, what festivals are and are not worth submitting to, where to try to get a premiere, these sort of things. And it was good. But in about 2022, a strange piece of news came across my desk, which was that that year, my old organization, Maryland Film Festival, was not going to have an event. And I didn't think too much about it. I was trying to look forward, not backward. But a couple days later, I got a phone call out of the blue from Sam Sessa at WTMD. And yeah, let's hear it for Sam. And Sam had got my contact from our mutual friend, Dan Deacon, the musician. And Sam had a question for me, which is, Eric, how much work and how much money would it really take to put on a film festival in Baltimore in 2023? Can't we do something to make sure that the city doesn't go without a film festival next year? And for me, that was a real, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in moment. Because that conversation led to what became the first New Next Film Festival. Originally just conceived as a one-off so that Baltimore did have a worthy film festival in 2023. But on, you know, pretty scant resources, especially very short notice, we put together something that felt really special and was actually one of the best festival experiences I've been involved on professionally. So we decided to push to try to make it happen a second year, and it did. And that went even better. I was pinching myself after year two. And now I find myself again, you know, with that job that sounds like a kid made it up, because year round, I'm the movie guy now, watching movies and getting paid to do it, a little bit anyway. So here we are as an audience, February into March. I'm the movie guy. A lot of people ask me about the Oscars and who I'm rooting for. And it may surprise you, and usually surprises them when they ask the question, that I don't even watch the Oscars. Like, the Oscars, you know, and no offense to those who do, but from where I'm sitting, every once in a while, there's a film like Barry Jenkins' Moonlight that really moves me and embodies what I love about independent cinema that also goes on to score at the Oscars. But more often, the Oscars to me feel like following the remainder of a baseball season when the Orioles have been eliminated months ago, and there's these like big money, big Titan teams probably taking steroids who are, you know, up for a title that no longer interests me too much. So I guess, and also to extend the metaphor, my job and the job of curators like me is to scout talent from all over the world that is ready to get called up to the major leagues. Which I guess is my way of saying, if you love the Orioles, you'll come to New Next Film Festival October 1st through 4th. Thank you for your time. Yeah.